Welcome to Podcast on Fire Network bonus episode 25 on The Uninvited. They remade Korea's A Tale of Two Sisters as The Uninvited in 2009, directed by the Godd brothers, English filmmakers Charles and Thomas Godd. How does it fare? With me, Kennedy and Hangul Celluloids, Paul Quinn, you know, we're here, both of us, to tell you what we think of this Korean remake. And as you all know, Paul Quinn always is enthusiastic about the prospect of taking something he loves in Korea to America. Right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, except it's not like that at all. I have some question or two about that very topic and your sort of opinion and theory about why there is sort of a remake frenzy popping up every now and again. Sometimes it does manifest itself in a movie, like in this one, in this case, sometimes it peters out. Is it a good thing? We're gonna answer, I guess, is it a good thing that no one really knows or talks of this movie anymore? Like, if it ever had a fever pitch, I think it was for a week or two when it was released and then it died. You know, because no one remembers this movie anymore.
I don't even know if there was that much of a buzz at the time.
Well, the box office, I have some notes on that, indicated that some people like to go anyway and watch it. Maybe they were buzzing about it and went out on the internet and gave it extra buzz and hype. But anyway, that is all a big old introduction to tell you that we're reviewing The Uninvited, and this is a website exclusive bonus episode, an extension of sorts of what's Korean cinema on A Tale of Two Sisters, the optional coverage, if you will. So thank you very much if you have followed us from the main episode available to you all to this website exclusive chat. So we're gonna give this movie what it deserves, a review. So there it is. The Uninvited from 2009. The plot from IMDb goes as follows. Anna Rydell, played by Australian actress Emily Browning, returns home to her sister and best friend Alex, played by Ariel Kebble, after a stint in a mental hospital. Though her recovery is jeopardized thanks to her cruel stepmother, played by Elizabeth Banks, aloof father David Strathairn. I always had trouble pronouncing his name, David Strathairn. I know him when I see him, like he's one of those solid actors. Aloof father, and the presence of a ghost in their home is jeopardizing their recovery as well. So that's the plot you recognize from A Tale of Two Sisters. But this is called The Uninvited. And let's track back here. There's a Korean movie called The Uninvited that this isn't a remake of. So tell us shortly about the Korean movie, what you remember of it. What was it, first of all, to repeat a little bit from the main episode, was that a horror movie?
Yes, it was. I loved it. It's one of those horror films that you either love or you hate. It's a slow boiler. It lets you figure out what's going on. It does not tell you much as you go through. So it infuriates some people. I absolutely adored it. It's got Jun Ji Hyun in it. You all know from My Sassy Girl and whatever. She's incredible, as I think she always is. I think it's a very understated horror film, and that's the way horror films should be. So it really worked for me, and it's the first issue I have with this remake of A Tale of Two Sisters. Why call it The Uninvited?
It's a confusing thing, to be sure. I mean, there's tons of generic titles out there, of course, throughout the decades. My other minor question, did you ever heard of that Uninvited, if that was ever up for a remake? Or is it too difficult, you think, to remake?
Too difficult. It's, if you watch it, you'll see it is a one-off. It's specifically, it's very psychological. It's very quiet. It's too quiet for a remake because, you know what America's like. They like an explosion after 2 minutes or, a house blowing up or whatever. The Uninvited just doesn't have that. You don't get any real horror for about the first 45 minutes. They're just not going to remake it. There's no point.
Was it popular in Korea thanks to her, therefore, and that got audiences into the cinema to tackle challenging material?
It did all right, and it did all right because of her. It was just, it was when she was on her high after My Sassy Girl, so, and her career sort of tumbled a little bit, featured about after that before she hit the heights again. So it sort of caught well. It didn't do incredibly well, but it did well enough for a really quiet no-name horror, really.
Even I heard of it back in the day, and that was due to the fact that I knew that the actress was popular. Granted, I've only seen My Sassy Girl. Was not the biggest fan of that, but she did very much all right. It was just, in the version I watched, My Sassy Girl, it was clearly too long, because there is an extended version, and that was the one I watched.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
140, fucking hell.
Yeah.
It was the first episode of What's Korean Cinema to boot, so I came out blazing and hating.
Oh, wow. You see, I did it the other way around. I saw the short version first, so when I saw the extended one, I was like, oh, there's extra bits. Oh, great.
You know, I'm going to throw this out anyway, but so if you know, you can discuss with me. If you don't, then that's fine. But if we think about the remake frenzy that happens, regardless of where it happens, often you hear about American companies primarily picking up movies just, you know, shortly after releasing whatever territory talking about, maybe even pre-release and stuff like that. There's a frenzy where they just sort of gather a package, it seems like, to do something with, maybe, you know, just to have it. Do you know if that has happened to Korean movies, where you know there's a chunk of movies that were picked up for possible remake? Or is it sort of on a movie-to-movie basis, you think? I mean, some have happened, as we know. Old Boy has happened, My Sassy Girl has happened, this has happened. Those were the only three I can think of off the top of my head.
I mean, there have been a few others, you know, Elmer or Elmari, or whatever way you want
to pronounce it. Lake House, baby, with Keanu and Sandra.
Speed-free.
Lake House.
There have been things like that. There have been a few that have been bought and nothing's been done with, etc., etc., etc. So there's always been a frenzy. There's always been a grab stuff and do stuff with it later. I mean, when you think back to when Old Boy was said to be being remade, you know, it was years, years before we heard anything, before we saw anything, you know, and they'd linked the number of directors that were linked to that, Spielberg and whatever else, over the years. So,
and Will Smith as the lead at one point.
Exactly. So from my point of view, they grab it because they know Korean cinema on and off is incredibly important, I guess. And they think, oh, we'll grab that because that's going to be exciting, or that's done really well. And then they sort of take years to pull every bit of originality out of it before they do anything with it.
Yeah, it's the classic development hell of certain movies, whether they are Korean ones brought in for a remake or not. I mean, we talked about it way back in the day when we discussed Castaway on the Moon, which seems like an example where there was solid news about it's going into production, a director is connected to it, and now in 2015, there's nothing in it. See, yeah. I just have a gut feeling, Paul, that Castaway on the Moon, the US remake, isn't going to happen because it doesn't have this market or genre pull where it sort of like makes sense to plaster remake on it as well, because it's sort of a story. It's not a genre sort of template that you that Tale of Two Sisters could be argued to be, because it's a horror movie. Castaway on the Moon is quirky, and quirky isn't a genre template that just makes people go gaga.
No, and that's the thing. And as you say, regardless of what we say about The Uninvited, it's a remake of a horror, which is going to be easier to do than a remake of a niche film that was funny because it was just really well made and really well settled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Castaway on the Moon is essentially very Korean. It's a lot more Korean than A Tale of Two Sisters.
You know, in a perfect world, these quirky great movies from Korea would be handed to quirky great filmmakers. I mean, sounds daft just because I watched one of their movies like last week, but just imagine the Coen brothers having a go at Castaway on the Moon, controlling it all as well.
That would kind of work. Even Wachowskis, or whatever way you pronounce it, you know, maybe give them a chance. But you know for a fact, any film in for a remake, they're going to put someone else, like the Gard brothers, in to do it, and it's just they don't give it to the right people. They don't give it to the quirky. They don't give it to the people that will do what needs to be done, and they won't let what needs to be done anyway.
And I just thought of it, like the Coen brothers, I thought that maybe they just write their own material. No, hell no, they've done a remake or two. I mean, Grit, what was it called? The Grit movie, but I think that was a remake. Yeah, I forget, Tough Grit, whatever, Grit. It was good. I loved it, but I can't remember the effing title. I believe that was a remake, so who knows? But it can work, but that would be so far from mainstream that the powers that be that want that pickup to be something that the US audiences love, for instance, if we're talking US audiences, then it would sort of, the powers that be would not approve as much when it's not easily consumed material that they want to bring to a big audience. You know, Coen brothers are beloved, but they're not bringing in Star Wars money.
Well, exactly. And that's the hub of the problem, you know, it always is. They'll want mass market, and in order to do that, they're going to have to pull everything that makes it worthwhile out of it.
And because we have the bonus fair format at our disposal here, let me just ask you, as I always do, were you brave enough to venture into the Old Boy remake?
I haven't seen it as yet.
You want to?
No, not really. At some point, I will, I guess. I should, but I've no interest whatsoever, just because... I've seen Old Boy. I know Old Boy, and no remake of Old Boy is going to be Old Boy, and I know I'm going to slag it off before I see it, so really, what's the point?
I mean, you're struggling with redundancy there, and possibly some of the more controversial aspects of Old Boy. I don't know if they even pop up in Spike Lee's movie. I'm saying I don't know, because I haven't seen it. I was not really interested, because I'm a fan of half of Old Boy, primarily the first hour, and then I kind of tuned out. It's one of those, like, it didn't stick with me. It's a good movie, but it didn't stick with me like other Park Chan-wook movies did prior.
I kind of agree with you. You know, all the talk about Old Boy and the number of times it's mentioned on taglines of film after film after film. Yeah, it's a good movie. It's not as great as everyone says it is.
It broke through. I mean, that's the thing. No wonder it's referenced. We talked of that in terms of Kim Ji-woon with The Good, the Bad, and the Weird. It breaks through culturally, and then that becomes a reference point, whether you personally think it deserves that big spotlight on it or not. I think it's a case of that. But from what I've heard, I think it's safe to say that Old Boy didn't just sort of flop, but it was sort of a middling movie, I suppose, at best. And I trust my gut feeling there that there's no hidden gem there. I always liked the thought of the casting in the end, that Josh Brolin got the role, because that's an actor I like that could embrace that role and sort of sink his teeth into it. But nevertheless, I never really had an interest in it. Back to The Uninvited. I mean, it did make about $30 million in the US, which is not really terrible for a movie that isn't terrifically high budget or anything. But whatever impact it had and gained then, it sort of petered out, because I can't for the life of me believe that it maintains sort of an impact and fever pitch with an audience so many years on. This is from 2009. It's one of those that's not going to, when the 10th anniversary happens, it's not going to extend its life like other movies do. You know, it's one of those movies that came and went in my mind, and I was sort of surprised that it did as well as it did. But
when you told me the box office takings, I was actually surprised, and it was the first I'd heard of it when you said in our previous podcast that it made 30 million. I was just like, really? Wow. Fair play to it, I suppose. I'm trying to get my head around how it made 30 million.
Good, decent marketing, I suppose. It was a PG-13 movie, therefore it's aimed more at teens and what have you. So it's a combination of it all, I suppose. It never reached me. It's like, oh, they're doing a remake of it. I had no idea until I did the research, essentially, for Tale of Two Sisters. So there it is.
Before it was released, all I really did was answer comments from people or emails from people saying, no, it's not The Uninvited with Jun Ji-hyun. It's a remake of A Tale of Two Sisters, which is a completely different film. If you haven't seen it, go and see it. Blah, 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 blah. That's where I was with it. I was just explaining it wasn't a remake of The Uninvited for months.
Well, there's the problem there. And they turn to you, the guru, on all these things. So there it is. Yeah.
They know they can get a rant out of me easily enough.
By the way, I forgot to ask, is there anything in 2015 or from the last year or two that has been rumored from Korea, that's been rumored to have like traction in terms of a US remake, you know, horror or not.
The only thing I'm aware of, we spoke about it slightly yesterday, was a thing that's coming up supposedly from Kim Ji-woon, which is that Secret Agent, which is the first Warner Brothers have officially announced that they're gonna make a Korean film, which actually quite excites me.
Which is a different way in, of course, because there you're dealing with a co-production of presumably something new that's not already been made by Kim Ji-woon or anything like that. So
totally, and if they're being brave enough to say we're gonna make a Korean film, then I'm hoping they'll go with the whole idea of what a Korean film should be, rather than remaking an American version of a Korean film. So I'm quietly hopeful, but that's the only thing I'm aware of in terms of, you know, remakes and stuff. They're doing a lot of moving to, you know, between China and Japan rather than Korea at the minute. So
they really should take a page out of what out of the book of Sony and Columbia. From and this was rather low key back in the day, but they had a sort of 3-4 movie deal with both Taiwan and China and a couple of one or two more places. They maybe might have done 2 Chinese movies and 1 Taiwanese, but and combined that with US production money, and that resulted in, among other things, the movie Double Vision, which starred David Morse and the Hong Kong actor Tony Lagafai, who is confident in Mandarin, so he can appear in a Taiwanese movie. And it was directed by a Taiwanese filmmaker, Chen Kuo-Fu. And it was a good meeting of creative minds from both sides. So to say, it wasn't an American movie, it was a Taiwanese movie where it all made sense to have an American component there. It's a serial killer thriller with supernatural elements. So it was certainly not a buddy comedy or anything. And it sort of just felt natural. It was not this, you know, watch what happens when an American cop meets. So it was, they should take a page out of their book. But they kept it rather low key. It was not this big mainstream momentum that program got. They also did a movie in mainland China called Big Shot's Funeral, which had Donald Sutherland with mainland China talent in it. Media satire, I believe. So that was a comedy. Let's move on to The Uninvited, and for my short opinion first. Clearly, the Guards, the brothers, wanted to make something of their own, but in a way are saddled with the remake aura, and they are going to be judged, unfortunately. But by injecting elements almost completely new for the story and reversed characteristics in a bad way, there's no confident quality here. There's a bunch of overstated stuff and a bunch of bland, dull, and frankly, bad. You know, it's simply bad. But I can see that they were trying to be their own and distance themselves, but it didn't help regardless. So there it is. What do you want to say in short about The Uninvited?
My problem with The Uninvited, more than anything, I have a lot of problems with The Uninvited, as we'll talk about, but in general, as you say, it's not confident enough. They're not brave enough to just take a story, whether it was theirs or Kim Ji-woon's or a combination of the two, and present it. They have to almost explain their way through it, almost make you understand. And in trying to make you understand, it just made me stamp my feet.
Yeah, I sort of feel a little bit for the Guards, but clearly they are the ones that you judge first and foremost, despite. I just have a feeling that this was a committee movie. And if they wanted to do something of their own, you know, that attempt was there. But what they added was just overstated stuff. And the reverse characteristics we'll certainly get to, because all of a sudden, I wouldn't say the reverse characteristics are uniquely American or anything, but they just, as a pre-tease, if you will, they sexualize matters a whole lot more than was needed for this story. So
Yeah.
You know, the issue of redundancy is going to feel hard to shrug off, knowing the movie intimately, the Korean movie, and to give it a fair chance can be a problem. But what is that the problem, redundancy, or is it, or lack of quality, that is the problem?
I think it's lack of quality. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, and this is one of the few nice things I'll say, The Uninvited, bad though it is one of the better U.S. remakes of Korean films. You know, if you take the things we've mentioned, the My Sassy Girl, the Il Mare, they're hideous. They're so offensively bad that actually sitting through them is a chore in itself, almost impossible, despite being shorter. You know, the Uninvited, yeah, it is bland, but you manage to sit through it just to sit through it. It's not that much of a bind. So it's certainly better than them, but...
That doesn't give me a confidence to sort of like, I gotta check out my Sassy Girls to see what the deal is, because I thought very little of The Uninvited. So, I mean, if it's heads and shoulders above my Sassy Girl, like, oh dear.
Yeah, certainly it's the least offensively bad of any of the remakes I've seen. And that's saying a lot.
Yeah, you know, the problem here is also the new movie they're making, because largely it feels, because of the choices and the added story, it feels like a new movie that would have had a better chance if they just scripted something disconnected to A Tale of Two Sisters, but they didn't, because they thought like, we can pull some people in via the remake aspect. Yeah. But the problem is they're not making something that is good, that is scary or interesting. I mean, it starts with the teenage sisters. It really, I mean, that's the core of it all. The switch to a more international style, because I'm going to be sort of neutral and not blame it on the Americans or anything. But we see, you know, issues of teenage life here, you know, drinking and potential sex and voiceover from minute one, which is actually some her recapping a dream. But still, I thought, uh-oh. VO, voiceover, no voiceover. And what it all comes down to as well, not just sexualizing both the sisters really, but here's a main problem that wasn't a problem in Tale of Two Sisters. There's no believable emotional connection between the sisters at all.
None.
You know, I'm jumping all over the place here, but the one like very transparent way they sort of sexualize this movie when it isn't needed at all is in the latter scene. Emily Browning is drugged, and she's stripped into her panties and bra after being drugged by Elizabeth Banks' character. Tell me, Paul, what was the context and need for Browning to be in her panties and bra after being drugged?
No, there was no need for it at all, and there was no need for her to be stripped by the nurse character or the stepmother character.
It's cheap, man. I mean, I'm a man like, oh my god, a half naked woman, but I'm not that kind of man where I just go like, oh, approve, holy approved skin.
I totally agree. I could be described as suspect and dodgy on many levels, but
yes you can.
Thank you very much. when I watched that scene earlier today, I actually almost turned away in my seat. You just think, I kind of don't need that. And there's something about Anna's character, the main girl. She's so deliberately tiny and deliberately young looking that it almost had an extra nastiness to it. You know, you've almost got this pubescent child being stripped, and it's just
I did, you know, wince a little bit actually, and that is also the characteristics they've switched around. Like, the main character is not the stronger, more driven one, which is fine if you can't execute, but they certainly doesn't do not. And you know, initially we have, you know, dreamy and surreal imagery that she's recapping, but sort of having voiceover due to that recapping sort of negates the dreamy and surreal nature that Kim Ji-woon was so strong at doing. Yeah, just yeah. Letting it be quiet and still, that whole recap of you know, what she went into the boathouse and stuff like that.
Just, I mean, on that voiceover, I have a problem with voiceovers anyway. Even as far as, you know, my Sassy Girl, which I love, the voiceover annoyed me. But, you know, in terms of this, at that point, we don't particularly know that she's in a mental institution and she's telling a story and we're seeing it visually. And as you watch her going up to the house, whatever it is, she says, I went up to the house, and you see her go up to the house. I went in to see my mother. She goes in to see her mother. My mother was alone. Her mother's alone. It's that whole thing of, regardless of whether it's voiceover or not, they're telling you what you're watching minute by minute for a good 7.5 minutes. And I did time it.
So, you know, with the stopwatch, like tick, tick.
For such an early stage in a film, to pull me back from that to the point where I'm going to allow it to do whatever it wants to do is going to take a big thing, because at that point I've finished, I'm done, I've had enough.
Yeah. And you so want filmmakers, producer studios to believe more in their audiences, because the non-verbal is actually not that challenging if you believe in your material. Kim Ji-won certainly believed in the non-verbal, but it all feels like expository in a very non-confident way, you know, even compared to regular films and not compared to just Kim Ji-won's film. Their choices are their choices, of course, here in The Uninvited, but there's less of that through and through mysterious aura. I mean, there will, when we see the house and all of that, the sort of atmosphere they set here is normalcy. There's a normal tone here, and that sort of just flattens the movie a little bit. It's set at a beautiful coastal town and all of that, but it sort of is not what I, you know, because I connected to Tale of Two Sisters, this was sort of not the atmos and surroundings that I wanted. Not that I needed to copy Kim Ji-won, but it isn't scary to go from the sunny to the dark. They just sort of flattens the movie through the setting.
Totally. I mean, if you look at A Tale of Two Sisters, when the Sumi goes into the house for the first time, you've got this beautiful, beautiful house, but it's very light to dark, and there's an uneasiness about the whole setting. It's so, the cinematography is so amazing. When you look at The Uninvited, she goes in from the sunlight into a fairly bright house with a shadow here and there, and it's just a house, and there's nothing there.
And the introduction of Elizabeth Banks, for some reason, here's the cheap aspect again. For some reason in that scene, and one of the only scenes, there's a bunch of Elizabeth Banks cleavage for no apparent reason. The introduction is supposed to be sort of eerie, like, hello, welcome home, not like, hello, here's my boobs. And I love Elizabeth Banks, she's a great actress. I think this is just cheapening her image as well. Not her fault, I just blame this on really, we gotta dress her up that way. You know, that will set the character tone. No, it doesn't.
No, it really doesn't. And when she first met that young character of Anna, I immediately flash back to A Tale of Two Sisters when Sumi goes and meets the stepmother for the first time. And the only thing, well, they don't say anything, but the only scene they need is a close-up on the hands of the two sisters where they hold hands and they squeeze each other's hands. And immediately you get a chill up your spine. You know they're frightened out of their minds at this evil, evil woman. And not a word said. And you go back to The Uninvited and, yeah, am I meant to be frightened of her cleavage?
Yeah, and also because you sort of, the reversal of the sisters, the older one being, you know, 2 or 3 years older and sort of, you know, savvy. And she's been around a little bit. She's been drinking. And she appears hungover for most of the movie, which is a sort of like, oh, so hungover, you deal with it. And that's not great, sort of hints at what's to come or anything. It's just like, she's drinking. Like, why on earth do you need to portray this girl multiple times as someone who's, you know, had a drink or two the night before so hungover? Like, that's cheap too. And you know, they want to stand out. They want to, okay, we'll reverse the ages of the sister. One is more mature and more sexual, and we'll see where that gets us. When all is said and done, there's no reason to reverse it. There's
no
intriguing sort of like, oh, there's some different angles here, let's see what happens here. It just sort of again flattens the movie, and there's never any emotional connection between them. I didn't believe an iota of their relationships. They sort of are buddies, and that's not enough.
When they first meet up again, Anna and Alex, they hug and they go, oh, it's so good to see him. Within a second, the Alex character just suddenly turns and starts having a go at her, and you just think, yeah, it doesn't kind of fit. It just, you've just twisted that specifically to get an argument going, to set up, you know, their feistiness or whatever. And it didn't feel natural at all. And that, I mean, that's one of my biggest problems with the whole film. Nothing in it felt natural. It all felt kind of pushed and kind of contrived.
There's a decent, one or two decent horror scenes that they replicate. One of the more like faithful replications of scenes from A Tale of Two Sisters, where, you know, there's being, whoever she or it is crawls into Anna's bed, and you know, is a decent replication of what happened in Tale of Two Sisters. But really, they're not aiming to follow its template. I get the feeling that the God Brothers and the writers, they so wanted to break away from having to deal with the remake. Yeah, but yes. I just have a gut feeling that this is what they had to deal with, because they tried desperately almost to change up so many things and adding so many things. We'll mention a thing or two without spoiling it too much, I suppose. But you know, if you're going to change up crucial aspects to the point of reversing them and all, you know, I just pray that you should really come to your senses and remove the remake stamp on it all when you're changing up so much of it, because it's not like Sisters is untouchable story-wise. You can write your own story, and it can be about two sisters and various accidents, and removing a remake stamp might be good for you. You might get some heat, like, hey, that feels like a movie I've seen, but I think that aura and that stamp can be hurtful for and limit certain filmmakers.
Agreed. And the fact that you virtually ask anyone, they're going to say A Tale of Two Sisters is utterly original and utterly memorable.
Guess what? It was not the first time that story was made.
Well, yeah, totally. But, you know, it's just anytime you do a remake of that, you know for a fact that you're never going to get to the point where people are going to compare it positively. And they are going to compare it.
Yeah. It's really hard to shrug off that. But I found myself just feeling that, as you felt there when I asked that question, that quality is the problem here, not that it's the same movie all over again. Completely unrelated sort of remake business. But when I tried to watch the US remake of the TV series The Office, that first episode was exactly like the first episode from the British version. It's sort of like, this is redundant. It might be really good, but I've seen this. It's really no point to it. I mean, they did 100 plus episodes, so at some point they had to come up with something else. But it was sort of like, it's not for me. But I'm not slagging the work off. It's just that they brought it over, like, sort of beat by beat initially. And that's, you know, redundancy doesn't need to be a bad critical note necessarily, you know. It's sort of like, I've seen this, you know, the Ring remake. I've seen it already. I mean, there's no surprises anymore for me. And that's not slagging the movie off. I mean, the Ring US remake was sort of well received. But for me, I've seen it. It's nothing new for me. So I kind of like the, if I had not seen the Japanese one, then maybe, that's a pretty solid horror movie.
Yeah, it would have been, I guess it would have been watchable enough, you know, scary in parts. But as you say, once you've seen the original, if it's done beat by beat, it's like, I've lived this. I spent 2 hours doing it. I don't need to do it again.
But here the quality is the problem of all the new choices as well. I mean, here there's more emphasis on the mother's death, with the Korean movie sort of glancing it over, not in a bad way. It's just, we know that happened, but the mother is an extra character in this one, really, with the whole centerpiece around the lake house and that accident that happened and all of that. And the addition of, like, the prior identities of Elizabeth Banks' character, that she possibly has changed identities, so she's hurt someone that she cared for prior, like, new story beat, did not care for it one iota. Then there's the previously dead kids. I mean, what are you doing? This isn't Tale of Two Sisters anymore. It's a new horror movie, and it's not even a good new horror movie.
I think that was one of the issues I had most problems with, that whole, not only is she an evil stepmother, whether they believe it or if it's fact or not, but she is a murdering nanny who's been married before and murdered children. Now she's come to, and you just think, can't you just take it and make her an evil character? Why does she have to be essentially a serial killer who's got away with it for years, and she's going around the country killing children? I mean, heavens.
There's too much, man. I mean, there's too many elements here. Again, if they kept to the template that Tale of Two Sisters set, then again, redundancy might have been my final tally, and then I might have given it a fair chance, because, okay, I think it does fairly well, but I've seen this. But here I've seen it. Recognize some parts, a lot of parts are new, and again, to repeat myself, quality is the problem. Performances is the problem as well, or are the problem. Elizabeth Banks, again, very good actress in any role I've seen her in, except this one. You know, it's not convincing when she sort of slips into these the dark and, you know, moody deliveries. They have a little coffee shop scene, her and Anna, and she talks of her, the older people she's cared for prior in her life, and she sort of like switches moods and says, you know, when I worked with them, all I could think of, they'll all be dead soon.
Yeah, but it just, no, there's no menace. There's no menace there at all.
And she can't really elevate the material as such. She's saddled with this material, and that it just feels awkward and unnatural, to be honest. And that is not something you, an acclaimed actor is coming off as awkward and unnatural. I think you got to track it back to the material being a problem as well. I mean, Banks, I mean, I've seen a couple of movies here and there, but the one movie I return to more frequently is Second Mary Make a Porno.
Well, you say that's a good, funny film.
And she's wonderful in it. It's a filthy romantic comedy, but such a sweet movie. And she is such a sweetheart in that movie. I mean, she isn't in the scene as such, but I mean, again, we have the bonus episodes, so I can do what I like, but like the one scene I keep rewatching all over again when I watch Second Mirror Make a Porno, it's the exchange between Seth Rogen and Justin Long's character at their reunion at the start of the movie. So obviously this is a very rated R movie, so Zach, the Seth Rogen character, sort of thinks this character is interesting. So what do you do? I mean, you're from Los Angeles. I mean, what do you do out there? Well, I'm an actor. Wow, that's really impressive. Thank you. Fucking movies, pretty much. Look at you. Anything I've seen? What movies? Oh, all sorts of movies with all male casts, like Glengarry Glen Ross, like that, like Glenn and Gary suck Ross's meaty cock and drop their hairy nuts in his eager mouth. There's a long pause. Is that like a sequel? Sort of. It's a reimagining. Oh, like The Wiz. Well, more erotic. And with less women. No women, to be exact. Then there's another pause there. God, he's so good in that scene, Rogan. I apologize if I'm out of line here. But are you in gay porn? Guilty as charged. There you are. And she's trying to hit on her high school crush, which is actually the boyfriend of Justin Long's character, her high school crush, which was the former Superman, Brandon Routh. He's actually gay now, so it sort of falls apart. And it's a wonderful movie. She's great in it. And it's sort of sad to just see, like, oh my God, she's good. What is this? Yeah. It's not, and I don't think it's her fault in being uninvited. Not at all. So you sort of come to appreciate the Tale of Two Sisters honed choices a lot more when the sort of key scenes that are replicated are just, they aren't redundant, they're just not scary anymore. There's a version of the kitchen sink scene, which is here, it's sort of, they're doing sort of the same thing, but it's just not convincing at all, not scary at all. You just kind of go 5, 4, 3, there's the boo, and yeah, because we haven't connected to the atmosphere in the house and the mystery and the characters, no wonder that moment is flat as anything. And even the big twist, of course, we know what's to come, the big twist, they're not shying away from that, but again, it's the same thing. Like I just said, if you'd cared for the movie and its atmosphere and its characters and was on board with the mystery, that twist would have, you know, blown your hair back. And it does in the Korean movie. But here it's just like, yeah, well, okay, well, that's I've seen that before. Rather than like, oh my God.
Totally. And not to give any spoilers away, but the number of scenes where things happen that make you realize exactly what's going on half an hour, 45 minutes before it actually happens just means you're waiting for it to get it over with rather than being surprised by a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly what the case is with the main character. You know exactly what's going on because they've shown you repeatedly in scene after scene after scene.
That's sort of part quality being a problem, part redundancy coming into play here. But the movie is sort of tired and flat despite when we get this. And by that point, it has injected all of these extra story elements. And where it just, well, what? I mean, no, I am not engaged at all into this, and it's not terrifying either. And it just sort of, the choices visually and story-wise just kind of never click. And no wonder it feels flat. Looks and sounds like it's a solid executed production, of course, but at best, you sort of feel very neutral towards a scene or two here and there. Then at worst, it's just so damn forgettable and dull. I mean, I struggled to get through it as well, and this is a little bit over 90 minutes, and that's saying something. There's no, you don't even care about key characters dying or anything like that, and there's no challenging choices where I wish they'd believed in their audiences and presented some challenging choices. So it's a shame that they didn't try to honor the challenging aura of Tale of Two Sisters, or its terrifying nature. The God Brothers weren't able to replicate any terrifying nature at all. It's a new film, largely a new film, and it's a bad, unengaging one.
Totally agree, and it drags, let's be honest, scene after scene after scene to set up things that don't really need to be set up. It drags. It's an hour and a half that feels like 3 hours. And if you compare it to when we were talking in the last podcast about 1,000-year-old Fox, almost the same length, and it goes past in the blink of an eye, and you're just held engaged because it's just paced well. This is just slow, bland, and dull.
What one there, I don't have any other notes other than the one I sort of thought of now. One US remake that I've always wanted to see, and I keep forgetting about it to check if it's on Netflix, a horror remake, not of a Korean movie, because I like the original Japanese movie so much, and I like the actress that they cast for the US remake, one of my lifelong crushes. I would like to see how they did with the Dark Water remake starring Jennifer Connelly. Woof. Because I like her a lot. And I'm hoping sort of like maybe they did decent with Dark Water, because that was very, like, that had its emotional hooks in me. From the director of The Ring comes this, you know, very challenging, dramatic movie that is super terrifying in spots.
I'm not going to burst your bubble.
You better not. It's Jennifer Connelly, man.
It's Jennifer Connelly, and she does all right. It's pretty much beat for beat, near enough. And it works. And if you hadn't seen the original, you'd think it was a decent horror film. I didn't have a problem with it. Having seen the original, it's again a little bit of redundancy, Jennifer Connelly or not, mm-hmm. where you think, I've kind of been here and I've done this. There's nothing new, but they do it decently enough, and it does have frights and scares. I'd link it sort of along the American remake of The Ring. Same sort of quality, same sort of deal. It's not bad. It's certainly a damn sight better than The Uninvited.
Yeah, that encourages me, despite, like, phew, Jennifer still did okay. Like, God damn it, man, that remains a lifelong crush that's never gonna end. Fuck Labyrinth for stuff like that, you know, Phenomena, and, you know, Creepers for Dario Argento, and, like, this young actors being put into, almost real-life horror, where, you know, the scene in Phenomena where she, you know, is in that horrible, slimy pit of corpses, and that's... I'm not saying that's sexy, I'm saying that I love that journey as an actress that she took from a young age, and is still, you know, so many memorable choices, you know, both nude choices and just solid dramatic choices. I think we talked of Ben Kingsley the last podcast, and she did that movie House of Sand and Fog, with Ben Kingsley. Love that movie.
That's a great movie.
The Uninvited. Thumbs down. That's it. That's my last note. Do you want to say anything else, buddy?
The only other thing I want to say is probably the most offensive scene in the whole thing is where the sister Alex has been hooking through the stepmother's drawers and finds a bright silver dildo, excuse the phrase, and they have a huge conversation about how disgusting it is, take the batteries out of it and put it back in. And I just thought, why?
Yeah, it's not a comedic aside that sort of makes you go like, yeah, they're sisters, they're goofy and they're sort of mischievous. No, it's just, she has a vibrator. Like, again, they're over-sexualizing of the movie. Okay, it's an adult vibrator. It's not the sister's vibrator, but still, it was the least cheap choice, considering what we saw subsequently. But you're right, it's, well, I'm just like, what are they doing? I mean,
yeah.
They're nearly at the point where they're going to shoot the sex scene between Banks and Strathairn, but they don't. And I mean, even a good actor like he is just sort of does nothing in the movie, really. It feels like he does nothing. There's no, the, while Kim Kap-ho, is that it?
Kim,
his actor?
Kim Kap-su.
So, I mean, got the chance there to really make an impact. And that was also, you know, the focus was so much on his closed nature. And here, they sort of forget about David's role, I think. You have a daddy's there, sort of. And it's not good enough to do it that way, you know.
No, it's not. And the thing with Kim Kap-su's character is his closed nature made him one of the most important characters in the film. This guy just, they don't really pay much attention to him, and he's kind of there, but you don't know he's closed off, or you don't care.
Yeah, and the whole emotional like trauma that the family has gone through, you don't feel that either. Like, when you don't feel this story, then you obviously have a problem with. You're gonna have an uphill struggle, uphill battle with the viewers, and they certainly did with me. But yeah, if this is the best, as good as it's gonna get, God help the other remakes that I've not seen.
Yeah, you might want to stay away from them.
Yeah, yeah. Let me know when you've seen Old Boy, and express yourself in angry emojis if you like. But let me know if you've seen it.
Yeah, you may have to wait a while, Ken.
It's one of those, like, you can probably pick it up for a couple of quid nowadays.
Yeah, it's a case of actually doing it, and it's much easier to just not.
That's true, that's true. Speaking of picking up, as for availability of The Uninvited, there's an imprint DVD and Blu-ray in the US, as well as in the UK. And Netflix also, at the time of recording, offers it up for streaming in a variety of regions, and they are as follows: Sweden, Norway, Portugal, Brazil, Denmark, Argentina, Costa Rica, Mexico, Spain, Finland, and Panama. Not UK, despite disc being out there. Those rights don't go hand in hand with the Netflix streaming. So, it's out there if you wanna check it out. Obviously, being in English, it's no problem to watch it on the other regions, so to say. So that's that. Almost was going to drop an accidental F-bomb, like, fuck this movie. But what I was hinting at is, we're finished. You know, yeah. The bonus episode on the Uninvited, a good old discussion about a movie we didn't like for once. We're not damning it all just because they're American remakes. We're damning the whole remake frenzy and sort of highlighting how wrong it can go. And this is a case where it's helmed by British filmmakers, for heaven's sake. So it's all a mixture of elements here, not just one country. So,
yeah,
there it is. But thank you very much, everybody, for tuning in to the website exclusive bonus episode, and hope you enjoyed our sort of extended coverage of what's Korean cinema on A Tale of Two Sisters. And this was the discussion of its remake, and I can't wait to watch the original again. So just wash the bad memories away.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And look at something that has confidence written all over it. That's sort of what I remember from Tale of Two Sisters. But I've been Kennedy, and with me was Paul Quinn. So thank you very much for taking the trip to the website exclusive chat and extending the coverage with me, Paul.
Glad to be here. Thanks for listening, guys.